Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, the network for social justice. We open our show today with news from our nation's capital on three Republicans who cross the aisle to vote with Democrats and kill the Republican effort to repeal Obamacare. We'll also have news about efforts by the Trump administration to gut the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Next up, hear why some rural residents and county workers are unhappy over the county's proposal to outsource animal services. Then, learn about lawsuits filed that seek to stop President Trump's Voter Integrity Commission and why some assert that the commission's real goal is voter suppression. Women in Raqqa, Syria are burning their burqas, and we'll tell you why on today's show. Next up, hear about community cleanup days coming up in several rural East County communities. On our education report, learn about a bill signed by Governor Jerry Brown, authored by local Assemblywoman Shirley Weber to help combat hunger on college campuses. Then on People Power, hear why the La Mesa Sunrise Rotary Club wants your souls for their annual shoe drive to help benefit local charities. From Santee, hear about a victory by a local gun owner's PAC before the Santee City Council. On Destination East County, hear about the hottest events in town, from Pine Valley Days to the heart of Mount Helix. Then we'll take you to Julian for a story on a fiddling renaissance in our region and some music from some champion fiddle players. Hear how El Cajon police officers are pulling together to help a homeless mother of seven who came to the aid of an injured policeman. And finally, if you own a Roomba robotic vacuum, you may be surprised to find out that some Roombas have been photographing the interiors of homes, and iRobot wants to sell those images. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. Senator John McCain, an 80-year-old former prisoner of war who recently underwent brain cancer surgery, has had more than his share of serious health conditions in his lifetime. Late Thursday night, the Arizona Maverick cast the deciding vote to kill the Senate's latest and possibly final effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act, standing up and giving a visual thumbs down to the so-called skinny repeal bill with no replacement plan. The proposal would have given Congress 2 years to come up with a replacement before the repeal of Obamacare would have taken effect, although the Republicans have failed to produce a viable plan despite years of calling for Obamacare repeal. Senator McCain was joined by two other Republican senators, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine, along with every single Democratic senator in voting no. The measure failed 51-49. Had any one of those senators voted for the measure, Vice President Mike Pence would have cast the tie-breaking vote. Now, just days earlier, McCain drew some criticism for casting another deciding vote, that one allowing debate to commence on the repeal effort. In his 30 years in the Senate, McCain has never cast a vote against debate, but he has said he could not support measures that the Congressional Budget Office estimated would take away health care for some 30 million people. The Arizona senator and former presidential nominee for the Republicans stood up against his party's majority leadership and President Donald Trump, who once mocked McCain's years as a prisoner of war, despite the fact that McCain had refused early release due to being the son of a high-ranking officer, staying imprisoned for years with other men in captivity. McCain did, however, also have criticism for Democrats, who under the Obama administration pushed through the Affordable Care Act known as Obamacare on a single-party vote. He offered these words of wisdom for his colleagues. "Why don't we try the old way of legislating in the Senate," McCain said, "the way our rules and customs encourage us to act. If this process ends in failure, which seems likely, then let's return to regular order." whether or not Senate Republicans may try to reach across the aisle to include Democrats in health care reform discussions now, who have thus far been barred from all negotiating sessions, remains to be seen. But many Americans have called for fixing gaps and flaws in Obamacare rather than repealing it. The Senate action drew cheers from thousands of people who had gathered outside the Capitol during the vote, chanting "Kill the bill" as the historic vote took place, loud enough to be heard inside the Senate chamber. Many of the opponents told media they had serious medical conditions and feared passage of the bill would be a death sentence to them. For now, those with pre-existing conditions and other Obamacare protections have been granted a reprieve, although the action came as a disappointment to conservatives seeking to trim federal spending on health care. Republicans favoring repeal had sought a free market approach to increase competition, which they contended would give Americans more choices in policies to buy. That may be so for those with the means to afford those choices. But the Republicans failed to address how to keep health care affordable and accessible for the tens of millions who obtained policies, many of them for the first time, under Obamacare. President Trump, meanwhile, has said he plans to, quote, let Obamacare fail. And he has taken active steps to implode the Affordable Care Act's successes. Those steps include ordering a stop to advertising and staff help to advise the public on sign-up deadlines and assist them in getting Obamacare policies, cutting out reimbursements for insurers taking high-risk patients, and telling the IRS to not impose penalties on people who ignored the law's mandates to carry health care. Analysts warn that without the mandates, insurers would be stuck with mostly older and sicker patients, since the mandates encouraged younger and healthier Americans to buy insurance, spreading the risk and costs out broadly among all. Not carrying health care is, however, a very risky business and can be a death sentence if a young and uninsured person is diagnosed with a serious and costly to treat condition such as cancer.
This is Gene Carpenter. The Trump administration and the Republican leaders in Congress are looking to gut the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, government exec reports. The Bureau was established in 2011 during the financial crisis and mortgage market collapse as part of the Dodd-Frank reforms to protect consumers from deceptive and misleading actions by the financial industry. It's the only federal agency with a sole mission to represent consumers in financial transactions. Among other actions, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau secured nearly $12 billion from big banks for more than 29 million consumers who were ripped off by predatory practices and outright fraud by lenders. Since then, the Bureau has taken many other actions to stop financial institutions from harming consumers, forcing refunds of illegal credit card fees, making lenders repay consumers who were discriminated against, and recovering money for veterans who complained of abusive financial practices, to name just a few. The Bureau also posted consumer complaints on its website, prompting financial institutions to respond more than 700,000 times, often offering remedies to consumers. Most importantly, the Bureau set up new lending rules to help prevent problems that caused the Great Recession and preyed upon vulnerable consumers, especially older adults who in some cases had been fraudulently forced out of their homes or deceived with misleading advertising. In just 1 year, 2015, the Bureau got help for 600 senior citizens. Scams targeting seniors that the Bureau regulators say have an estimated cost to seniors of up to $36 billion a year, according to a report in The Conversation, authored by consumer law experts with decades of experience helping consumers. Those experts blast the Financial Choice Act passed by the House, a measure that would cripple the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, forcing it to sit idly by while financial institutions lie to consumers, the consumer protection expert warns. Many of these members of Congress have taken huge Wall Street contributions to their campaigns, making clear whose interests they are representing. The measure is backed by the president, who has stacked his cabinet with Wall Street executives and financial industry lobbyists, in a direct contradiction of promises he made to voters during his campaign when he pledged to drain the swamp. Some want to go even further, calling for complete elimination of the agency despite its proven track record of effectiveness at protecting consumers and holding big banks accountable for illegal actions.
A public meeting about the county's possible outsourcing of animal welfare services in unincorporated areas drew criticism last week from union members and some residents in Ramona, where memories of evacuating horses and other animals during the Witch Creek and Cedar wildfires are scorched deeply into local culture. "We have a lot of animals here. We need animal services," said one woman, interrupting the facilitator, a consultant, at the start of the meeting. Others loudly demanded to know why such short notice was provided. The county gave media and the public 1 or 2 days to get the word out for the July 19th event at Ramona Public Library, the only meeting planned in East County. Despite requests for another meeting with more notice, including a request from East County Magazine, the county has so far refused to provide one. Consultant John Gavarez told the audience that it was unintentional, calling it a glitch. After outbursts from the crowd, he asked for respect, to which one audience member shouted out, "We want to be respected too." Supervisors heard a presentation on outsourcing animal services back in March, making it unclear why longer notice could not have been provided to the public of public meetings on the issue. The Board of Supervisors in March voted to investigate outsourcing of labor currently done by 128 full-time animal services employees as a way to deal with increased personnel costs, costs of facilities not included in service agreements, and the public's request for increased operation hours. Animal Services and its animal control offices currently serve the cities of San Diego, Carlsbad, Encinitas, Solana Beach, Del Mar, and Santee, in addition to unincorporated areas, providing shelters, pound services, licensing, adoption, microchipping, injured animal rescue, enforcement of laws regarding dangerous animals, and permitting for animal-related businesses. In May, the county notified contracting cities that their agreements will not be renewed after they expire on June 30, 2018. Animal Services Deputy Director Lori Janot told attendees that they are just exploring the possibility of outsourcing to increase efficiency and save money, saying no decision has been made yet, but that the county wants to learn the level of service expectation from residents in the unincorporated areas. Her department's budget has risen 20% since 2013-14 to just under $19 million for 2017-18. Residents in the city of San Diego in 2016 made roughly 60% of the requests for help, using up 60% of the budget. So the county now wants to make cities such as San Diego and Santee get their own private service contracts and no longer use county animal services. The San Diego Humane Society is the only entity that has responded to the county as both qualified and interested in any possible outsourcing. The Ramona meeting included county staff such as the head of the communications office, Michael Workman, along with sheriff's deputies, union employees, animal-related volunteers, and a small number of Ramona residents, who brought the total to about 50 people. Service Employees International Union Local 221 has brought a charge of unfair labor practices against the county, stating in a handout passed out at the meeting that it will exercise its right to utilize the managed competition process to develop an independent proposal as an alternative to contracting out. The union declared the hiring of a consultant a waste of taxpayer dollars. According to the union, it notified the county back in March that the county had failed to give the union notice of this proposal before the supervisors' meeting. The union demanded that the county cease and desist any action regarding subcontracting animal control services until the county first negotiated with the union. According to the charge, the county notified the union in a letter that the demand to bargain over the initiative was premature. "We haven't even decided yet if we're going to outsource," Workman told East County Magazine after the meeting. "We're just looking at the idea." Union Representative Allison Press-Kreischer, when asked after the meeting for a comment regarding the short notice, said they don't want input. Guevara said the meeting was designed solely to get input on what is working well and what is not working in the way services are currently delivered. He handed out assessment forms and asked the audience to go into breakout sessions to discuss their ideas and then report back to the group. The breakout groups reported back and asked for no increase in adoption fees, maintenance of existing partnerships such as for animal rescues, more notice of public meetings with time to research topics, increased funding for public education, requirements for breeding businesses, well-paid, well-trained staff to avoid turnover, maintenance of funding for animal welfare, more affordable access for spaying and neutering, better training for volunteers working with dogs at shelters, more funds for animal wellness, more drop-off locations for animals, especially at night when only one control officer is on duty at each shelter, a disaster response team for each area, and more services for cats, especially strays. Dan D'Souza, Deputy Director of Animal Services, has told the San Diego Union-Tribune that the evacuation of horses during the Cedar Fire in 2003 was chaos, but that efforts had improved by the time of the Witch Creek Fire in 2007 due to animal control officers' laptops and GPS devices. But he said, ultimately, it's the responsibility of owners to evacuate their pets. One woman raised the issue of Assembly Bill 1250, which, if it passes, would block county governments from outsourcing work that would displace employees. When another woman in the audience asked what would happen to staff if the outsourcing goes ahead, Gavarez quickly said, "That's a wrap for the meeting." This was the first of three public meetings. The next is July 27th at the Fallbrook Public Library, and the last will be on August 17th at 6 p.m. at the Benita Public Library. Workman said, "The information from all three public meetings will be combined and reported out to the public. Those who missed the meeting can provide input to their county supervisor." According to Jan Hedlund of Potrero in East County, who helped stranded animals during the border fire in June 2016, the department's short notice of public meetings is common, and rural residents often don't know when key meetings are coming up. Many complaints about animal services were raised by Potrero residents during and after the 2016 border fire, when pets and livestock were stranded in the evacuation areas with owners away and unable to care for them in triple-digit heat. Some animals died before they could be reached, and others would likely have perished if not for intervention by outside community groups that arranged caravans of relief supplies. But that was largely due to lack of funding by the county, according to D'Souza. At a meeting with rural residents after the border fire, he said that animal services had only one employee for every 80,000 county residents, and some had no experience during emergencies, though they did rescue 145 animals. With county reserves of $1.7 billion, one of the largest reserve funds of any county in America, and far more than financial experts recommended, according to the San Diego Union-Tribune, it's unclear why animal services continues to be underfunded, or why the county doesn't increase funding rather than look to outsource jobs and critical services for animals region-wide. One resident at the Ramona meeting, asked by our reporter about the plan to outsource county animal services, replied, "I'm a volunteer involved in animal rescue, and I've talked to a lot of people in animal rescue in this county, and no one is for this." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Women in Raqqa, Syria, are burning their burqas, and men are shaving off their beards in celebration of being liberated from the Islamic State, also called ISIS or ISIL, by U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces. That's a Kurdish fighting group. British media reports include photos and interviews of joyful freed Syrians who had been forced to endure ISIS occupation of their city. The U.S. has been providing arms to the Kurdish fighters through covert operations, and recent media photos have shown U.S. Special Forces vehicles in the region. But now President Donald Trump, following a controversial private meeting with Russian dictator Vladimir Putin, has announced that the U.S. will end its covert program of arming Syrian forces that are opposing Syrian President Bashar Assad in Syria, where civil war has long been raging, along with the battle against ISIS, the Washington Post reports. Trump's action has drawn strong objections from Republican Senator John McCain, who, despite recovering from brain cancer surgery, spoke out as chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Senator McCain called the action playing right into the hands of Vladimir Putin. McCain added, "A key pillar of American strategy must be the removal of Assad from power as part of an end to the brutal conflict in Syria, which has fueled ISIL's growth through its cruelty, extended malign Iranian influence, and undermined broader regional stability." Former CNN producer Frieda Giddes has similarly called Trump's action a gift to Vladimir Putin. While the people of Raqqa celebrate escaping the cruelty of Islamic State terrorists, Trump's decision is expected to leave Assad, a brutal dictator who has long bombed and gassed his own people, in power indefinitely, as Russia has long wanted. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Multiple lawsuits have been filed against Donald Trump's Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity. In addition, critics voice concerns that the commission's true aim may be voter suppression, not protecting voter integrity. One suit has been filed by the American Civil Liberties Union, making clear that the commission held its first meeting in secrecy with no public notice. Teresa Lee, staff attorney with the ACLU, says this raises serious concerns about the credibility and intent of the commission. What are they trying to hide? She asks. Other lawsuits object to the commission's sweeping requests for private data on voters from all 50 states, including names, addresses, phone numbers, party registration, and the last four digits of Social Security numbers, which are often used as default passwords for commercial services. A lawsuit filed by Electronic Privacy Information says the commission took no steps to protect the privacy of sensitive information and asserts that the action would increase risks of privacy to millions of registered voters, including military families whose home addresses would be revealed. The suit alleges this would undermine integrity of the federal election system. The lawsuit calls making such private information public both without precedent and crazy. Most state officials agree. To date, 48 states, including California, have refused to turn over all or at least part of their voter data to the commission. In several states, outrage by voters has led mass numbers of people to unregister to vote. Requests to be removed from voting rolls shot up by 2,150% in Denver, Colorado, for example, after news of the commission's request for private voter data was publicized. ACLU Voting Rights Project Director Dale Ho calls the entire commission a sham due to appointment of Chris Kobach as vice chair. Kobach has a dark history of various voter suppression tactics as former Kansas Secretary of State. The Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law has documented that Kobach has also supported President Trump's totally unsubstantiated claim that millions of fraudulent votes were cast in the 2016 presidential election. Kobach himself made similar false claims of large numbers of undocumented voters casting votes, even though a decade of research found the rate of voting by non-citizens to be almost non-existent, only around 1/1,000th of 1%. Out of 42 jurisdictions studied by the Brennan Center, 40 of them could not find a single case of a non-citizen voting in the 2016 election. Most nefariously, Kobach created the Interstate Voter Registration Cross-Check Database that claimed it would purge duplicate voters off the rolls. It was used in 27 states with Republican secretaries of state in the 2016 election. According to investigative reporter Greg Palast, it was used to purge 7 million voters off the rolls, predominantly African-American, Asian, and Hispanic voters. Palast tracked down many of the voters purged and learned that they were not double voters. In some cases, people with the same first and last names, but different middle names, were purged, for example. Or people with common Latino names in different states were removed off voting rolls, with no effort made to determine whether the names were the same person or different people. The margin of purged voters through cross-check was more than enough to hand Trump victory over Hillary Clinton in key swing states, according to Palast. In Michigan, where Trump won by just over 13,000 votes, cross-check purged nearly 450,000 people off the rolls. In Arizona, where over 270,000 were removed off voter rolls, Trump's margin of victory was just over 85,000 votes. And in North Carolina, Trump won by about 177,000 votes, yet roughly three times that many people, over 589,000, were prevented from voting by the cross-check software that Kobach created. Salon.com, in an article alleging election rigging involving Kobach, asked, why is it more relevant to focus on a crazed and completely unsubstantiated and untrue allegation about 3 million illegal aliens voting, but not a claim by a fellow journalist that 7 million American citizens weren't allowed to have their votes counted? Multiple Democratic lawmakers have sent an 11-page letter to Vice President Mike Pence, who chairs the commission. The lawmakers oppose the commission's request for private voter data, which the congressional member state is unprecedented by any federal entity. They object to the commission's secrecy and sweeping request for private voter data. The lawmaker's letter further states, "The commission would better serve American voters if it focused on the growth of voter suppression laws that have spread since the Supreme Court undermined the protections of the Voting Rights Act," noting that in 2017 alone, at least 99 bills restricting access to registration and voting have been introduced in 31 states, while the number of polling places has been reduced in many places. In addition, the letter asserts many states have imposed restrictive voter ID requirements despite discriminatory impacts on voters on the basis of race and other protected characteristics. The letter from congressional members includes an extensive document request from the commission and ends with this pointed statement. "The commission should explore increasing access to voting, not perpetuating the false and damaging notion that massive voter fraud exists in our nation's elections." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
The Real East County Fire Safe Council, EDCO, and Team E invite you to bring your trash, green waste, e-waste, and brush to Community Cleanup Day events coming up in Boulevard, Hacumba Hot Springs, and Potrero. This is a free service to community residents. All events are on Saturdays from 7:30 a.m. to 12 noon. Dates and locations are August 26th at the Old Boulevard Fire Station, September 30th at the Camp Lockhart Event and Equestrian Facility in Campo, and October 28th in Potrero at 24865 Broken Lane. This event is for residents only, not businesses, contractors, or construction materials, and dumping materials before the event is not allowed. This has been a public service announcement from the Real East County Fire Safe Council. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Rebecca Williamson.
This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. Governor Jerry Brown has signed Assembly Bill 214 into law, a measure authored by San Diego Democratic Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, a former educator, to help ease hunger among college students in California. The bill aims to make it easier for low-income students to qualify for the CalFresh program. In a statement, Assemblywoman Weber says, "A lot of low-income students have difficulty accessing anti-hunger programs because of unclearly written policies. This bill is aimed at clarifying those policies and to streamline student access to programs that would help them alleviate food insecurity." The bill's text indicates that it will simplify administration of CalFresh for college students and require the California Student Aid Commission to provide students with information that could help them verify their eligibility for CalFresh. It also clarifies definitions of on-campus food retailers required to participate in the CalFresh Restaurant Meals Program. Currently, even many students who received SNAP benefits, formerly known as food stamps, are unable to buy food on campus with SNAP, so they wind up going hungry while at school. According to the State Assembly's analysis, 24% of California State University students have food insecurity, and 12% of them are homeless. On University of California campuses, nearly one in every five students does not have enough to eat, according to a separate study. In addition to Weber's actions, the University of California has taken steps of its own to help combat hunger, such as bringing food banks onto college campuses.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
The La Mesa Sunrise Rotary Club wants your souls. The soles of your shoes, that is. Shoes collected in the shoe drive will go to desperate people in Haiti and Africa. La Mesa Rotary will also earn money based on the total weight of all pairs of gently worn, used, and new shoes collected, with funds to orgs issuing a check. Those dollars will benefit local and international charities, one of which is the Total Eradication of Polio. Anyone can help by donating gently worn, used, and new shoes, which you can drop off at 6804 Murray Park Drive in San Diego. All donated shoes will then be redistributed through the Funds to Orgs network of microenterprise small business partners. Funds to Orgs works with micro-entrepreneurs in helping them create and grow small businesses in developing countries where economic opportunity and jobs are limited. Proceeds from these sales of the shoes collected in shoe drive fundraisers are used to feed, clothe, and house their families. One budding entrepreneur in Haiti even earned enough to send her son to law school. By donating gently worn, used, and new shoes, the shoes will be given new life and make a difference in people's lives around the world. La Mesa Rotary also welcomes new members at their meetings, which are held Wednesdays at noon at the La Mesa Recreation Center. This has been a public service announcement for the La Mesa Rotary Club. For East County Magazine, this is Rebecca Williamson.
Santee's City Council, after hearing testimony from gun owners, voted unanimously to send a letter to Sheriff Bill Gore asking him to change his policy on concealed weapons permits. Recently, the California Supreme Court upheld Sheriff Gore's policy of limiting concealed carry permits only to citizens who can show good cause, such as an imminent threat to their safety. State law already requires that applicants pass a criminal background check and take a class on firearms safety, but members of the San Diego County Gun Owners PAC convinced the council to ask Sheriff Gore to accept as good cause a desire for self-defense or personal protection, which many other jurisdictions already allow. More permissive concealed carry policies have been opposed by groups concerned over gun violence, and in some places, notably states with less rigorous background checks, concealed weapons have been used to commit violent crimes such as murder, rape, and robbery. But Michael Schwartz, executive director of the Gun Owners PAC, told council, "The ability for people to protect their life, their family, and their dignity when they leave their home should be a choice everyone can make." Santee resident Barbara Starr, a veteran who has worked in law enforcement in the military, told council she was denied a permit by the sheriff because she did not show good cause. She stated, "I currently work late-night shifts, and I would like to be able to defend myself." The Santee City Council agreed, with members voicing support for Second Amendment rights and the ability of law-abiding trained individuals to have a concealed weapons permit. Schwartz said he hopes to see other cities in the county entertain motions similar to the one adopted by Santee, adding, "The right to keep and bear arms is about protection of yourself, your family, and your dignity." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes Pine Valley Days, outdoor concerts, a murder mystery theater in Julian, and a 40th birthday party for the city of Lemon Grove.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including concerts in the park, a sip of Julian, the heart of Mount Helix, a star party camp out at Oak Oasis, a dive-in movie and ice skating at Croc Center, the Chippendales at Sequan, the Ramona Country Fair, and Laurel and Hardy comedy clips in Spring Valley.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
This weekend, one of East County's most iconic small-town celebrations, Pine Valley Days, takes place. This annual tradition begins on Friday, July 28th, with a deep pit barbecue and live music by Barb Wire. Then, on Saturday, July 29th, the Pine Valley Days parade rolls through the town of Pine Valley, followed by a day of fun festivities in the Pine Valley Park, including kids' activities, arts and crafts, vendors, live music, food, and a horseshoe tournament. For details, check the Pine Valley Days 2017 page on Facebook.
Santee Lakes will host a concert at the lakes on Saturday evening, July 29th from 5 to 10 p.m., two bands will perform The Long Run plus Dog and Butterfly for this summer's Eve event. For tickets and details, you can visit SanteeLakes.com.
El Cajon offers its summer concerts on Friday nights all summer long. The next few shows include The Fabulous Pelicans playing classic rock on July 28th, Tropical Rock with Stars on the Water August 4th, and Modern Country Music by Patrick Trampas on August 11th. For details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
The Julian Triangle Club invites you to help solve a hilarious crime at a murder mystery theater set for Friday, July 28th and Saturday, July 29th from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the historic Julian Town Hall. Dinner will be catered by Jeremy's on the Hill. A well-seasoned county fair opens under a cloud as a real estate tycoon plots to buy it out and close it down. This riles the locals who love the fair, especially the pig races, which are being targeted by protesters. Add in female country singers who will stop at nothing to claw past each other to get to the top, plus some romancing, and you have the stage set for shenanigans and murder. The table that gives the best correct answer of whodunit before the killer is revealed will walk away with a stellar prize basket. For details and tickets, visit julianca.com.
San Pasqual Winery Tasting Room in downtown La Mesa invites you to enjoy live music by The Waits on Saturday night, July 29th from 7 to 10 p.m. This acoustic duo performs a unique blend of folk, bluegrass, country, classic rock, and more in the winery's intimate back room. Wines by the glass, cheeses, crackers, and desserts are available for purchase. For details, visit sanpasqualwinery.com.
The Palmetto Brass Quintet will perform a free concert at Mission Trails Regional Park on Sunday, July 30th at 3 p.m. in the Outdoor Amphitheater. The Brass Quintet's repertoire includes classical, marches, jazz, ragtime, Dixieland, and Broadway musical selections. For more information, you can visit Mission Trails Regional Park website at mtrp.org.
Lemon Grove is celebrating its 40th birthday party with a year-long series of festivities, starting with the birthday party on Tuesday, August 1st at 6 p.m. at the Community Center. Two of the city's original city council members, Dale Bailey and Jack Doherty, will speak, along with others who labored to bring about the birth of the city. You can also see historical photos from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, savor goodies from the Lemon Grove Bakery, and see a video of local residents sharing vivid memories of the past 40 years of cityhood. Residents are also encouraged to make their own one-minute videos and send memories to post on the city's website for posterity. Plus, share your photos taken at the city's giant lemon.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Lemon Grove Summer Concerts in the Park series continues each Thursday night from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Berry Street Park in Lemon Grove. The lineup includes Bill McGee Blues Band on August 3rd, West of Five playing rock from the 70s through today on August 10th, and the Bayou Brothers with Cajun and Zydeco music of New Orleans on August 17th. Guests are encouraged to bring a picnic or have a barbecue in the park for these community concerts.
Santee's Summer Concert Series is held every Thursday night from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Town Center Community Park East. On August 3rd, Three Chord Justice will play Boot Scootin' Country. August 10th is Wingstock Night featuring a beer garden, foods from Wings and Things, and music from the summer of 1969. On August 17th, Upstream will perform Caribbean and reggae music. Santee's summer concert season ends on August 24th with variety music by the Mighty Untouchables.
The Julian Chamber of Commerce will host the third annual Sip of Julian on Saturday, August 5th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Sip features growers and producers of hard cider, wine, craft beer, showing that Julian has much more to savor beyond apple pies. This event is a fundraising benefit for Julian's annual Country Christmas and Tree Lighting Celebration. For more information, you can go to visitjulian.com.
The 10th Annual Heart of Mount Helix on August 12th from 5 to 10 p.m. will feature live art demonstrations and art auctions Music on Two Stages, a juried art show, succulent plant sale, and tastings from top local restaurants atop Mount Helix. The cherished Party on the Hill attracts around 500 guests annually, with funds benefiting the Mount Helix Park Foundation for upkeep of the amphitheater and park facilities. For tickets and the lineup of this year's entertainers, artists, restaurants, and other participants, visit MountHelixPark.org and click on the Heart of Mount Helix link.
You're invited to join County Park staff and the San Diego Astronomy Association for an evening of stargazing and a family campout at Oak Oasis Campground in Lakeside on August 12th. The fun starts with a sunset hike from 7 to 9 p.m. to search for bats and scorpions, followed by an evening of stargazing, campfire songs, storytelling, and s'mores. For more information, call 858-563-3600.
What better way to cool off on a hot summer night than a dive-in movie in the swimming pool at Croc Center? You can chill out in the pool on August 16th starting at 7 p.m. and watch Moana, a Disney movie with showtime at dusk. For details, visit sdcroccenter.org.
Here's another cool way to beat the heat. The Croc Center also offers public ice skating sessions each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 3:30 to 5:30 p.m., Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m., and Sundays from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. all summer long. Skate rentals are available. Croc Center is located at 6737 University Avenue, just west of 70th Street. For rates and details, visit sd.croccenter.org.
Listen up, ladies. The Chippendales will be on stage with their all-male revealing review at Saquon's Live and Up Close Theater in El Cajon on August 19th at 7 p.m. and again at 10 p.m. How much will they dare to bear? For tickets and details, you can visit Saquon.com.
The annual Ramona Country Fair will be held on August 24th through the 27th at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center in Ramona. Crafts, carnival rides, contests, vendors, live entertainment, fair food, and lots of fun are highlights of this event. A Western show and the second Ramona Motorcycle Rally are also being held this year. The fair is open Thursday and Friday evening, August 24th and 25th, and all day long on Saturday and Sunday, August 26th and 27th. For full hours and details, visit the Ramona Country Fair's Facebook page.
Thelma, Stan, and Ollie will be the theme of the next gathering at the Saps at Sea, the Laurel and Hardy Sons of the Desert Association in San Diego, on August 26th at 7 p.m. at Trinity Church in Spring Valley. The event highlights works of Thelma Todd. This bubbly blonde was not only a highly respected actress and comedian, but a longtime favorite of the Saps, featured in several hilarious comedy clips that will be shown.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. Each year, the town of Julian comes alive with the sounds of music, fiddle music, along with banjos, guitars, mandolins, and mountain dulcimers at the annual Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest. Recently, we're seeing a revival of interest in the art of fiddling and, more broadly, a renaissance in traditional music both regionally and nationally. Avery Ellisman is the district representative from the California State Old-Time Fiddlers Association, which started 40 years ago. Locally, there are now around 60 members on a mission to enhance appreciation for and involvement in old-time fiddling. He says there's been a huge bump in sales of acoustic instruments nationally, according to the National Association of Music Manufacturers. And locally, two major nationally known musical instrument manufacturers, Taylor Guitar and Deering Banjo, are both adding staff here in East County. Baby boomers have the money and the time to rediscover the joys of just fiddling around, a pastime that evokes bygone days when life was simpler and the pace of living was slower, with time to listen, learn, and make some music of your own. Ellisman says of fiddling, this is the music of the people, adding, one person sits with and teaches another. Fiddling is most prevalent in rural areas, also a popular pastime to while away time during inclement weather. It's what people did for entertainment, kids, long before the advent of radio, TV, or the internet. Ellisman says, I consider music to be one of the highest forms of human celebration, a celebration of life. Fiddle music is infectious in a very positive way. The world needs more of that. Though played on the same instrument as a violin, he adds, fiddle music calls you to dance. Julian's old-time fiddle and pickin' contest has its roots in a Julian banjo and fiddle competition that started over 60 years ago. For many years, it was run by the Julian Lions Club. But as the club's membership aged, interest in hosting competitions waned. The focus shifted to entertainment, and eventually the event dwindled. Ellisman runs the Julian Family Fiddle Camp each spring to teach fiddling skills to the next generation. So he asked the Lions to partner with his group and the State Old-Time Fiddlers Association, but, he says, the Lions declined. So Ellisman turned to the community instead, asking the local Chamber of Commerce and local merchants to support a new and revitalized competition. The community agreed, and the competition has grown ever since. It's now a 2-day event, encouraging visitors to spend the night and help boost Julian's local economy. Ellisman calls Julian the jewel of East County, noting that the event draws people from across the West and as far away as Alaska. The first modern-day Julian Fiddle and Pickin' contest was held in 2014. Fiddling refers to bowed instruments, while picking is for unbowed instruments such as the guitar, mandolin, banjo, and mountain dulcimer. Ellisman notes proudly, "We have kids from age 6 up to age 86, and they're playing together. It's a wonderful way to bridge the generations." Before, Julian's events were not traditional fiddle contests, but now they are. Each competitor must perform 3 elements, a hoedown, a waltz, and a piece of the musician's choice, such as a jig, a polka, or something else. Competitors can compete in age-based categories or in an open competition that any age can enter. The open competition is considered the premier event, with bragging rights for winners who beat all comers. At the 2016 competition, Ellisman's 16-year-old daughter, Shira Ellisman, competed for the first time in the open competition category. Early in the day, youngsters competed, and then in the afternoon, the open picking competition was held, followed by the open fiddling division. Announcer Dwight Warden explained that the history of fiddling goes back to the 1700s in America. Thomas Jefferson was an avid fiddler. Fiddling gained popularity again in the 1900s, thanks to Henry Ford, who liked fiddling so much he had fiddle competitions in all of his dealerships. But then fiddling events shifted to hokum and showfests, with people playing fiddles behind their heads or beating on instruments with broom straws, Warden recalls. More recently, the pendulum has shifted back to traditional fiddling styles that popularized the genre to begin with. In the 1950s, a major competition in Idaho put the focus back on musicianship, and the modern fiddle competition was born. All 3 pieces must be played within just 4 minutes, and no hokum is allowed. Shira Ellisman opened up the fiddling competition playing Sally Johnson for her hoedown entry, followed by Morning Star Waltz and Don't Let Your Gal Go Down. And here's a little bit of what this talented fiddler sounded like. The local teenager's teacher is Luke Price. a graduate of the Berklee School of Music, who was also a two-time winner of the National Fiddle Championship. After Shirey was finished, the announcer exclaimed, "She's got a future ahead of her." The competition was stiff, with many other talented performers. After the contest, three of the fiddle judges also performed, Matthew Hartz and Luke Price, both multiple National Fiddle Competition winners, and Mabel Vogt from Idaho. Hartz told the crowd, "I'm excited to be here and come before a group that's so supportive. For us to carry this music and art form forward, we need your support," he added, as some in the crowd offered up donations or purchased CDs. Hartz performed Festival Waltz and Shuck in the Bush to a wildly enthusiastic crowd. Here's a little excerpt of this dual national champion's performance. Finally, the long-awaited announcement of the awards winners came. First, the junior winners were announced, and then the open competitors. Tom Dillon of La Mesa, who plays with a bluegrass band, took first place in the open picking category. Then, the open fiddling winner was announced, and Shira Ellison claimed the top prize, beaming from ear to ear. Afterwards, her teacher, Luke Price, shared with us how he first got interested in music. "My dad started me on guitar and banjo at 3 years old," he said, in between signing autographs from his fans. "I started classical violin at age 8. It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He said, adding, "It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He's come a long way since then, passing along the skills and joy of old-time fiddling to a new generation, including Shira Ellison, as she commences her own musical journey. You can learn fiddling and picking skills locally by signing up through julianfiddlecamp.com and listen to the talented local and national competitors at the next Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest by visiting sandiegofiddler.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, this is Miriam Raftery. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the shooting of that El Cajon police officer who has been released from the hospital after suffering serious injuries. In investigating the case, El Cajon police learned that Ayesha Booker, the MTS bus driver who came to the injured officer's aid by using his police radio to transmit "officer down" and summon help, is currently homeless, along with her 7 children, who range in age from an infant to a 13-year-old. They became homeless after their landlord sold the house where they had been living. Finding a new place for such a large family is difficult, so the family has been sleeping in their vehicle while looking for a new home. Booker is also behind on her car payment and fears her vehicle could soon be repossessed, says Travis Howard, president of the El Cajon Police Officers Association. He commends Ayesha Booker on her bravery and quick thinking, which led to prompt help for the fallen officer as well as arrest of the suspect. So now, the El Cajon Police Officers Association wants to help Ayesha Booker in return. They've set up a GoFundMe page called the Ayesha Fund. And that's spelled I-E-S-H-A Fund on GoFundMe.com. The police group, along with the El Cajon Firefighters Union, is also working to find emergency housing for the family. Howard concludes, we are hoping to get public support behind Ayesha and help her out of her financial hardship, adding, we again want to thank Ayesha for quickly stepping in and assisting our officer.
More and more homeowners have shown that they are ready to Roomba, buying the robotic vacuums to clean their homes, but many don't realize that for the past 2 years, Roomba's i900 series vacuums have been aided by tiny cameras that have built photographic maps of customers' homes, capturing far more than dust and dog hair. Now, Colin Engel, Chief Executive Officer of iRobot, the maker of Roomba, told Reuters News Service there's an entire ecosystem of things and services that the smart home can deliver once you have a rich map of the home that the user has allowed to be shared. Now Roomba wants to sell maps of your home's interior for access to smart home services. Engel told Reuters that iRobot, which made Roomba compatible with Amazon's Alexa voice assistant in March, could reach a deal to sell its maps to one or more big companies in the next couple of years. East County Magazine's editor owns a Roomba and reached out to iRobot to request that her data not be shared, also voicing privacy concern for others whose jobs make privacy paramount for safety's sake, such as police officers, judges, or psychiatrists who may not want criminals or deranged patients potentially gaining access to maps of their homes. James Bossman, Public Relations Manager for iRobot in North America, responded, despite what Roomba's CEO earlier told Reuters, Bossman told East County Magazine, we have not formed any plans to sell the data. iRobot is committed to the absolute privacy of our customer-related data, including data collected by our connected products. No data is sold to third parties. No data will be shared with third parties without the informed consent of our customers, he claimed, contradicting iRobot CEO's remarks in Reuters. But he made it clear that in the future, the company hopes its customers will opt in to allow such information to be shared to enable smart home devices to work better, such as voice commands for lighting systems. New partnerships would first need to be forged, he added. But just how clearly would such information be disclosed to consumers? Will it be buried in fine print that nobody reads? Or would users expressly need to sign off before a Roomba map of their floor plan could be shared with anyone willing to pay and potentially accessed by hackers who might steal your personal information? An analysis of iRobot's privacy policy at Gizmodo found ample opportunities for third parties to get hold of Roomba's users' data, including not only iRobot subsidies, but third-party vendors, but also the government. The potential for such data to be misused, hacked, or even posted maliciously online also raises uncomfortable privacy issues for Roomba users. And besides the potential for sale of this data, just who is looking at your home's interior at the iRobot company itself? Rhett Jones at Gizmodo offers these cautionary words to would-be Roomba owners. Just remember that the Roomba knows what room your child is in. It's the one where he bumps into all the toys on the floor. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.